The Manitoba Association of Christian Homeschools would like to thank the Learning House for sponsoring this recording.
Welcome. I am so excited to be here today. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I appreciate the opportunity to come and share with you and talk about the things that matter so much to me. So, writing must matter to you if you're here, and you're probably struggling. So, I want to first of all say that this is not a lecture. So, I would love to hear from you if you identify with something. I'd love to know that. I'd love to know what's happening in your home. And once in a while, I might ask you, like, is that what it's like? Is that what's going on in your house? I don't want to go on and talk about something if you've all got that figured out, because that would be a waste of time. No one likes to waste their time. So I really want to be able to tailor this to what is going to help you the most. If you have questions, I will definitely be having questions after, and you're welcome to ask me in the middle as well. So that's great. Most of all, when I'm teaching, I am the, like, camera on, mute off teacher, not a lecturer. So I would love if you participate and talk back to me. So that's great. Welcome here. I am Teresa, as you said, and I mentor students. So the difference between a mentor and a teacher is kind of ambiguous. A mentor is someone who comes alongside someone and helps them to achieve their goals and their dreams. So my first job is to help students realize that they have a dream and that writing's going to get them there. And that's probably your first job, but we're going to get to that. So that's my little spoiler. Because the reason you're here today is probably because your student is struggling with writing and you want to know what to do about it. And you might be surprised why they're struggling. So sometimes there's a lot of feelings that happen with writing. There's a lot of feelings in our homeschool. And I was talking to a parent today, and they said, I think I'm the only one that my kids don't want to hear from me. Yeah, okay, laughing. Yes, laughing. Yeah, no, you're not the only one. Almost every parent struggles with this. And we usually do it in silence. We don't want anyone else to know that we're struggling. We don't want anyone else to know that our students don't want to hear from us. Our students are refusing or shouting or crying or slamming doors or whatever happens in your house. I don't know. It's kind of loud in my house. We're expressers. Maybe you're, like, very quiet, but in my home we like to express. So there's a lot of noise going on, and they're telling me what they think. And it doesn't end when they turn 18. My son is 20, and it doesn't end. He still expresses. So that's okay. We like to talk about our feelings. We like to talk about how we're feeling about things and why we're feeling that way. So, but you might be wondering, why all the big emotions about writing? What is the big deal about writing? My students, I ask them this all of the time. When you think about writing, how do you feel? What is going through your mind? What are you thinking? What words are you telling yourself? And they will use words like angry and overwhelmed. My stomach feels sick. I get a headache. My shoulders hurt. I feel worried. One boy said he felt strangled. That's pretty descriptive. They say things to themselves like, what if I do a bad job? Or, I'm going to fail at this. I just know I'm going to fail this. I can't do this. These are all words that real students have told me in the last year. I ask this at the beginning of every single one of my terms with new students, and I am always amazed the depth of frustration and emotion that they have about writing. And why are they feeling this way? Right? So they feel like they're going to fail. They actually tell themselves, I'm going to fail at this. If I fail at this, I'm going to be a failure at life. If I can't write, that's no good. I don't want to let my parents down. Nothing like raising the stakes in this game, right? Not only am I failing myself, not only am I wrecking my whole future, now I've let my parents down too. What if I just can't do this? I just don't know how. Why are students so afraid of writing? Do you have any thoughts, any ideas why you think your students might be afraid of writing? Is there any? Yeah? They're afraid of failing. Oh, yeah. Who's not afraid of failing? Yeah, we're all afraid of failing. Right? This is a normal thing. Yeah, they're afraid of failing. Any other ideas? Any other thoughts? Pardon? Oh, they might be lazy. Oh, yeah, you know what? It's really hard work. And why should they apply themselves and do that hard work? I had an adult say to me today, he was telling me his experience. When he was in school, he was really good at math, and he did the math, and he knew if he showed up in class and he participated, and he didn't give them a hard time, and he handed in most of the work, he didn't ever have to write an essay because he would get 60% anyway. So he just never wrote. Why? Why invest if you don't have to? They're economizing already. Why invest myself something that's scary, something that's hard, something I don't think I can succeed at, and something I don't think is valuable in my life? Why should I do that? So there's all of those fears. And on top of all of that, we've been teaching them skills since kindergarten, grade one, if you use grades. Okay, we've been teaching them all of these skills. We've been teaching them spelling. We've been teaching them how to make a sentence. We've been teaching them grammar, whether we do it formally or informally. However you teach, we've been teaching them all of these skills. And now we come to writing, and all of those skills all of a sudden have to come together. So we've taken and we've like created this puzzle, and we put all the pieces in the box, and we say, all right, make the picture. No wonder that's scary. And not only that, let's imagine our brains. Our brains is like a huge office building, and spelling is kept in one office, and grammar is kept in another office, and punctuation is kept in another office, creativity is in another office. The actual tactile skills, the fine motor skills, that's in another completely different office. So no wonder when they sit down to write and they're like handwriting or typing, you know, they're working on motor skills, they're trying to put sentences together and ideas together, it's no wonder they're not running down the hall to the punctuation area trying to figure out how to spell that word. It's really hard work to bring all those skills together. So there are so many pieces, and those are just the like skill pieces. On top of that, there could be learning differences. I can't read my slide. There could be gaps in their learning, so little pieces that they just don't remember or they're not sure of. There's so many different areas in which they might struggle that just make writing so difficult. So the first one that we're going to discuss, and I'm just going to quickly breeze through these, is learning differences. So perhaps you have some guess that maybe your student learns a little bit differently. Don't be afraid to do some research. Don't be afraid to like discover, learn more about that. If you choose to get testing, that's entirely up to you. But definitely research. Like think, well, if they had this difference, what strategies would I use? And try them out. Try different strategies. Why not? But we're just going to skip over that one really quickly. And then skills gaps. So we have like spelling. We have homophones and homographs. So the words that sound the same and the words that are spelled the same. We have punctuation, grammar, organization, logic. All of these things, any one of those places might be a big struggle where they already feel like they're failing. They already feel like they're struggling. And now we just expect that they're going to figure it out. On top of that, writing is a project management thing. We're asking them to work through a lot of steps. So they have to plan, organize, be self-motivated to come back again and again and again to do something that they don't enjoy, that they're afraid of, that makes them feel bad, that makes them discouraged. That takes a lot of discipline. How many adults struggle with working through all those things? How many of us have a hard time staying on track with tasks that we struggle with? I know my workout plan is pretty sketchy. I know the benefits. It's not even that hard. It doesn't even take that much time. I've lowered the bar and lowered the bar and lowered the bar trying to make this happen, right? But it's hard. Discipline is hard. This is a skill that we continue to learn throughout life. But they don't understand that it's a lifelong learning skill. They think if they don't have it right now, they are already failing. And then we have setbacks. So maybe they struggled with something. Maybe they have to redo something. Maybe they get behind. Then we have avoidance. I don't want to deal with it. It's too hard. It's too hard to face that failure, even if it's not a huge failure in life, even if it's just a small piece that they have to just step back and grow from. Those are hard, hard things to ask our young people to do. Oops. And self-exposure. So writing is a skill where we take what's inside of us, what we believe, what we think, and to put it out there for the whole world to see. It's like art, music, any of those things, any creative things that come from inside of us. That's really scary. What if someone doesn't agree? What if they think what I have to say is dumb? What if they think I have to say is just silly? Or what if they think it's irrelevant? Or what if someone laughs at me? What if I'm just wrong? And not only that, we're asking them to take what they have and put it out there for everybody to see. And then we're going to grade you on how well you do that. Great, hey? This is sounding like writing is the best thing ever. I bet you all want to go right now and just write. Writing can be really scary for kids, and it's scary for adults too. I write for a magazine, and very honestly, every single time I sit down to write an article, I'm afraid. I do this all the time. I write 2 articles every 2 months for them. You'd think I'd get over this, but I'm putting me out there every single time. Fear of failure is a big, big thing. We all can identify with this. Recognizing that it's possible that we could fail. It's possible that that article I write could be terrible. And the editor's going to say, what's going on with you today? Fix that. So far that hasn't happened. But you never know. These things happen. We all have setbacks. And all of these things, when our student is struggling, how do we feel then? Like, what does that make us feel like? What does it feel like in your home when your student is struggling? Frustrated. Oh yeah, I've taught you this. You should know this already. Why don't you just sit down and do it? Just do the work. Okay, I've said these things. I know, I'm a mom. I've homeschooled, I've done this. You know, my son is 20, my daughter is 16, and I still say, would you just please finish? Because we get it. But when it's you, it's really hard, right? We might be overwhelmed. We might feel like we've failed. Homeschooling is a scary thing, right? I don't know how many times I said, I just don't want to screw them up. I just don't want to wreck them. Right? I don't want to wreck their whole education. Yeah. We fear failing. What if we're wrecking their language arts? What if we're standing in the way of them learning and growing? We all have these fears. We all worry about these things, right? It would be so wonderful if people would share those things so we didn't all feel alone. But so often we keep them hidden. We don't want anyone to know. We might be frustrated, we might feel like we failed. We might wonder if there's something wrong with us. Can I not teach this? What's wrong? What's the problem? I want to talk to you about solutions today. Because we're not here. We all know that the problem is. And now we know why we have this problem. So today, the first solution I have for you is a mindset change. And that's probably not why you came here today. You probably thought you were coming for how to write. But the first thing that has to change this situation, is to look at the world in a different way. When we begin to look at the world, and when our students begin to look at the world as difficulties being hurdles, like in a race that we race toward and jump over, that we train to jump over instead of a roadblock that's going to stop us or derail us, everything changes. So we go from a door closed, I just can't do this. I guess I'm not a writer. I'm never going to be a writer. I can't do anything about it. To, well, I'm not a writer yet. But in order to get there, I need to apply myself and set goals and continue to persevere and change my attitude. Oh, that's no problem, right? You've never told your kid these things, I bet. Every day? Every day? I know. I understand. Often they don't like to hear it from parents. My 20-year-old is probably the most motivated person I know. But let me tell you, when he was 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, there was no way he was taking it from me. Not happening. My 16-year-old, she still doesn't want to hear it from me. Mom, I'm not in your classes. I don't want to. I don't want to know. I don't want to talk to you about it. They need their own mentors. They need someone else. They need someone else that they can be accountable to that's really going to be able to speak into their lives. So that's one piece of that. But the question is, how can you get there? Because you can work with your student on this, even if they don't want to hear from you. And the first thing is to get them dreaming. What's their future look like? No, I don't mean, what are you going to do when you graduate? That question is terrifying. I mean, what does success look like? Who do you know that you respect? What is it about them that you want to emulate? Start learning that now. Start growing today in those ways. Start being more like that person. So if they are someone who is outgoing, persuasive, able to stand up and speak, confident, those things are skills that are learned. They weren't born that way. And when young people start to realize that people weren't born just being the way they are, that we develop those habits and we develop those skills, then they can get there. And the most exciting thing is writing skills get you there. When was the last time you wrote an essay? It's been that long? It's been a while, right? I wrote one 2 weeks ago. I might be the only adult I know that writes essays on a regular basis. I write sample writing for my students to read to see what it's supposed to look like. So I'm probably the only one I know that writes essays on a regular basis, unless you're an academic, unless you are a researcher, things like that. You're probably not writing essays on a regular basis. Most students believe that writing essays is a waste of time because they're never going to have to do it when they're adults. And I'm here to tell you that would be true if the purpose of learning to write an essay was to write an essay when you were an adult. But writing essays is so much more than being able to write a paper. Writing essays teaches you your own voice. It helps you to be able to connect with an audience, to be able to show them why the things that you have to say should matter to them. And those are the skills that are going to make a difference in life. They all want a job. They all want to make money. Most of the time when you ask a young person, what does success look like for you when you're like 25, when you're 30? They're going to say, oh, I want a fast car. I want a big house. Because those concrete things, those are things that they can easily identify. All of those things take money. How are you going to get money? Well, I have to get a job. What kind of a job? Not a minimum wage job if you want a big house and a fast car. How are you going to get that? What happens when you go for an interview and they say, why are you the best candidate for this job? If you can't look at your audience, that employer, and recognize who they are, what skills they need, what they really want to hear, which is not, why are you the best candidate, but what are you going to offer me that someone else isn't going to offer me? And then very quickly be able to identify in yourself the skills that they need and be confident enough to put it all together, you're not going to succeed very well. But those are the skills that essay writing brings. To be able to look at a situation, to know your audience, to know what matters to them, to know what they care about, what they believe, and what they're looking for. And then to be able to show them why what you believe should matter to them too. So if you're in an interview, you want them to believe that you're the best candidate if you want that job. So those are the skills that essay writing brings us. Not to mention, by the time you learn to write an essay, you've developed time management and confidence and agency in your life and all of those skills. They're going to get you through academics and they're going to make you successful in the real world. Those are the skills that really, really matter. Those are the skills that employers are saying students are coming to them as young adults and they just don't have. Young adults are not able to enter the workplace at this point, most of them, and be able to look at a situation, find out what the problem is, come up with a solution, sell that solution to their management, and then get their team to work with them towards that solution. Those are the skills that are going to make someone successful in a career, in a home, in relationships. All of these things really, really matter. Not because you can write an essay. So when students recognize that all of those things that are going to help them get what they want in life, short term, long term, actually come from learning to write and come from learning to be able to think clearly and logically and persuasively, then they're going to buy in and they're going to work at it. You've seen what happens when your young person does something that they really want to do. There's nothing that's going to stand in their way if they really want it. And the last thing that they really, really need to succeed is accountability. So whether that accountability comes from you or from a sibling or a cousin or an aunt or an uncle or someone that you know from church or someone that you know in your life that they really respect, or whether you have to outsource that and find someone else to be that accountability, it's so important for young people to have somebody to talk to, somebody that's actually going to ask them if they're succeeding, and if they're not succeeding, expect a reasonable answer for why they're not succeeding and what they're going to do about it. If you said today, I want to do this one thing, you could flip a coin, and that would be the odds of you actually doing it. If you write it down and you tell somebody, I'm going to do this thing, it's only 60%. That's what the statistics tell us. 60% chance that you're going to do it just because you tell someone. So when people post on social media, oh, I'm going to do this and this and this, 60% chance if that's all they're doing. But if they know that they have a plan to make that happen, and if they know that every week on Friday, someone is going to say, what did you do about your plan this week? It is 95% likely that you will follow through on your plan. That's the difference accountability makes. Failure. Have we started a lot of plans and failed them? I have. I've started lots of plans and failed them. Failure management is so, so important on this journey. And that's part of the accountability process. So it's important for students to be able to have a structure or a schedule inside which they evaluate themselves. How did I do? Am I succeeding? Where have I failed? What have I learned about myself? How can I grow from this situation? And not only that, okay, yesterday I didn't do all the things on my list that I had to do for school. Well, what am I going to do about that? Well, they get to move from yesterday to today because they still have to be done, right? Now I have more to do today than yesterday. And if I couldn't do it yesterday, what makes me think that I can do it today? How is my plan going to be different? So to be able to replan, to discover what was it yesterday that held me back from succeeding, and how am I going to change that practically in my life today? And as I like to tell all my students, trying harder is wishful thinking. You were trying yesterday. You were trying last week. Getting up every day and saying, today I am not going to lose my temper. I'm going to try harder. Doesn't work, right? Have we tried that? I've done weeks and weeks and weeks of that. It's just discouraging. Trying harder doesn't solve the problem. You are trying. It's not a lack of wanting to try. It's a lack of a plan for solving the problem in the first place. So when students see, oh, yesterday I got distracted by this thing, what can I do to make sure I don't get distracted today? And they choose, oh, I'm not going to have my phone near me. I am not going to sit in the same room as my 3-year-old sister trying to do my math. That doesn't work. Or I'm going to make sure that I do my very hardest thing first so I get it off my plate so I don't have to dread it all day. Choosing a strategy to actually succeed makes a difference. And that's how students grow. Imagine how much confidence they will have when they realize they can actually change their behavior. Yes. Oh, good question. Is it done by the parent or teacher, or is it done by the child themselves? Okay, that entirely depends on the age of the child. I mostly work with grades 6 to 12, and I advocate for them to take on their homeschool schedule. Starting in grade 6, more and more of that, those tasks to be managed by them. How many times have you heard your student say to you, just leave me alone and let me do it? Do they want you asking them? They don't want you asking them. Do I want my husband to text me 3 times a day and say, did you work out yet? Did you work out yet? Did you work out yet? No, I do not. That would end very poorly. Okay? But, so it is really important to let them take over that responsibility and let them fail. That's the hard part. So I would say, so I'm going to speak to older. How old is are your students? Grades 5 and 7. So by grades 5 and 7, I would say at that point, allow them some freedom and say, okay, which subject do you want to be responsible for? I might start the conversation with, I bet you are really tired of me nagging you about your math. If that's the subject that you're always having to hassle them about. In my house, that's what it was. So I bet you're really tired of that. Oh, yeah. I would love to stop hassling you about your math. How would you like that? Would that be good? That would, that would, Like, how many of your kids would just be like over the moon if they knew you were not going to nag them about their math? Yeah, they'd be pretty happy, right? Or whichever subject it is that's bothering you or bothering them. And so then I would go from there and say, okay, well, here's the solution is you want to be responsible because you're growing up. But if you're going to be responsible, that means I'm not responsible. So that means it has to be on you. So let's start by you making a plan when you're going to do that subject. Now you tell me what time of day you want me to ask you whether you finished that. What's going to happen if you don't finish that? What happens to me as an adult if instead of washing dishes, I go read a book? I just have dishes later, or unless I get someone else to do it. I just have dishes later, right? It just gets put off. I've just moved my free time to a different spot. That's all I've done. And hopefully I had free time to move. So don't be afraid then later when they say, hey, can I go? And you say, I thought you used your free time during math. Is that what you did? Oh, I guess you won't have time then. That's kind of lousy. Natural consequences are the best consequences because it's not you. It's them. But the problem with natural consequences and the problem with giving them responsibility is it comes down to parent self-discipline. Now, I have to learn to bite my tongue. So hard. How many parenting books did I read and close and go, that would be great. But if I had that much self-discipline, I would not be reading this book. Right? Really? The people who have the self-discipline that wrote the book, like, if I had that, I wouldn't be reading the book. It's the same thing. But we can learn and grow too. As our kids learn and grow, we can learn and grow. And it's okay to have that conversation with them and say, listen, you know what? I'm learning how to have a young person who's growing up. And I've, you know, maybe you've done it before. And you can say, I did a really bad job last time. This time I want to try a different thing. I want to do something different because I want to learn and grow. And it's going to be hard for me too. So maybe when I forget and I nag you, you can say very nicely, I thought this was my responsibility. But the best part of that is then you get to say later, oh, I thought that was your responsibility. So does that answer your question? Okay, excellent. So we're here about writing, remember? So the writing process, process matters, okay? The writing process is the growth mindset process. It's the same thing. It's why I teach them together. The writing process is to pre-write, and then plan an outline, and then to write a rough draft, and then to redraft and re-revise, and then to edit and proofread. So that's like starting with a small step and then realizing that you're still not perfect and you still have places to grow and not letting that be a roadblock to you and say, oh, well, I just can't do this because it's not perfect first time. Right? We have to learn and grow through the whole process. The writing process is exactly the same. And students get so stuck on the rough draft. They get to the rough draft, and then when they realize that it's not perfect, or when they realize that it's not ready to hand in, they feel that they have failed. Because it's not good enough. I guess I failed. It's not good enough. But they don't realize that that's the point. That's only the first step. The first step is to write the draft, and then you work on it some more, and then you work on it some more, and then you work on it some more. And it's the same with all of the rest of the way we grow and growth mindset. So writing is actually project management. So if you see on the screen, there's like a diagram there about project management, and I've superimposed the writing steps on top. So we have the planning stage of project management. And so this is where we're pre-writing. So we're choosing a topic, we're coming up with ideas, we're doing initial research to see if, you know, where we want to go is really going to work or not. And here's a hint here, a little tip. They should be able to argue both sides. Oh, argue. Yeah, I'm not talking about regurgitating information. I'm talking about persuasive writing. So really regurgitating information or writing a report about a topic is not something that's generally useful in life. Yeah, sorry. Writing book reports, schools get students to write book reports to see if they read the book. It's not about writing book reports. It's really to see if they read the book. And it's them to go, check, they wrote something. Woohoo! One more piece of writing handed in. So if we really want to choose the writing that really matters in life, we want to teach our students persuasive writing instead of report writing. So that's just a little tidbit for you. And then they have to persist. So then they have to like take the initial piece of pre-writing that they do and they have to make more of a plan. They have to do more research. They have to find more facts. They have to become the expert on that topic and then create an outline. And that outline is, you know, have to have an order. It has to have structure. It has to have logic. These all sound like really great life skills, right? Being able to organize, be logical, put things in a good order. So that's the persisting part. And then they have to keep on persisting, and then they're going to write that first draft. Very honestly, writing the first draft is the easiest step of the whole process, and it is the only part of the writing process that actually has writing in it. I mean, you're note-taking, or you're researching, or you're organizing, or you're outlining, or you're editing. So this piece is the only piece that's actually like physically writing sentences and paragraphs. And it's the easiest part. If you have an outline that is logical, that makes sense, that has all your proofs and has all your sources already on it, the writing is a breeze. Interesting. Writing is easy. Writing is not the problem. All the rest of the pieces that come around writing are the most difficult parts. And then they have to deal with failure. Ouch, that rough draft, it's not perfect. Guess what? It's not perfect the second time you read it and fix. It's not perfect the third time you read it and fix. It's not perfect the fourth time you read it and fix. It takes a lot of times through. So persisting in editing, persisting in revising, and then that final proofreading when you are so sick of your paper, you never ever want to see it again. Most students have already handed it in by now because they just can't be bothered. I'm done. I don't care anymore. And to be very honest, I handed in lots of papers like that in university. Okay, I just can't look at this anymore. It doesn't make a difference. I'm just handing it in. This is the difference right here between an amazing paper or an amazing argument and a mediocre one. It comes in the end. So in that persisting, and then you get to success. And then you start again. So the thing is, project management all comes down to discipline. It comes down to facing your fears, coming back again and again and again and again and again and doing the thing you don't want to do or you don't love, or that's boring. And it's, I'm afraid because this is a homeschool group, I'm gonna have to say this out loud, and some people might not like it, but it's okay if they don't like it. They don't have to love everything. Love of learning is wonderful, but there's some points in life we don't have to love everything. There's gonna be parts of things we don't love. That's okay, we have to do them anyway. There's some pieces that we just have to do. So this all comes full circle again, back to mindset. Because as soon as you have to deal with discipline, and as soon as you have to deal with procrastination, and as soon as you have to deal with feeling like you aren't maybe going to succeed easily, it comes back to remembering and being able to talk back to yourself and say, yeah, I know this is hard, but I can keep doing it. And if I keep doing it, I'm going to succeed. And if I need help, I can reach out and I can get help, because there are people who will help me if I reach out. Those skills are the skills that really, really make a difference in our students, in their academics, and in their life. And that is why we teach essays. So your students, they're not struggling as much because they don't know how to write. It's not the writing part of the writing process that's so hard usually, unless there's gaps in that area. And if there's gaps, it's usually not that difficult to just focus in and deal with a gap, right? Once you recognize it. The biggest problem almost always comes down to what they're telling themselves about themselves, what they're telling themselves about their abilities to succeed, and their ability to push through and do hard things. Because those are the places where we all struggle. And it's a difficult thing. So I want to, first of all, just ask if anyone has any questions. Yes. I would start by showing him the writing process, like not while you're doing it, but start by finding a website or a book that teaches the writing process that has all the steps there, and getting him to tick off. I've done this piece, I've done this piece. You're not done until you get to the last. So that might be one thing. In my classes, we actually work through step by step, so they hand in every piece, and then we're very specific and say, okay, now you're going to go back and look for this and this and this and this. Go fix those things. And now, okay, hand that in, and we give feedback again. Okay, the next thing you're going to do is you're going to go and look for this and this and this and this and this. Because they're learning the things to ask themselves. And it is hard because you don't want to just say, no, it's no good like this, right? The other thing I might suggest is if you check out on my blog, I have Frazzled to Fearless, and it's about grading rubrics. So if you use a marking rubric, and your marking rubric, I purposely add things to the marking rubric that they have to do at the end. So if they don't read the marking rubric, oh, look, you just lost 10 marks because you didn't even read the marking rubric. All you had to do was go and bold 3 verbs and underline, you know, like these things, just to train them to do that. But the marking rubric will tell them what they need to succeed. And if they know what they need to succeed, they will go back to their own writing and they will look for those things to succeed. So if you recognize there's these like 2 things that he usually needs to work on, if you add that to the marking rubric, you can say, okay, that's fine. But here's the marking rubric. So you go and you look at the marking rubric yourself and you see if you've done all those things. And then if he hasn't, he has the option whether or not he's going to fix them. And if he doesn't, well, then they'll be wrong. Natural consequences. If you don't like number grades, you don't have to use number grades to use a marking rubric. Do a happy face, do a meh face, and do a sad face. Okay, I don't love check marks and X's because that's so like black and white, right, wrong. Most things in life are not all the way right or all the way wrong. So it's just how many times out of how many did you kind of do it? So if you have a range, you're better off. So marking rubrics are a great way, and they're a great way right from really young to actually get students to realize that they can win at writing. It's, you know, you just have to like do the, make sure that you've done all these things. Check, 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 check. And when they realize that they can check the boxes, and when they start to internalize the things that they're supposed to look for, they're automatically going to put that in their writing. And then you add more things to the marking rubric, and more things, and more things. And you take things off as they become automatic. Any other questions? You guys are so quiet. You're definitely not 13. No more questions. Okay. So is there anyone who'd be willing to just share with me some of the struggles that their student is having with writing, or some struggles that you're having with language arts in your home? If you're willing to share, I'd be happy to talk a little bit more about that piece of it for you. It's kind of vulnerable. Okay, thank you. Okay, so her son will happily write like pages and pages about whatever he loves, right? Like hockey and a hockey trip. But when she asks him to write, do you ask him to write about hockey?
Sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand. And we all get tired of hockey. Okay, so there are a few things that you can do. It is difficult because especially you said he was 12. I was going to guess middle school. They get like so narrow focused. There is only one thing in the world that matters in middle school, and they hyper focus on that. And I have a few of them. It's hockey, and I've read a lot of essays about hockey, and I don't like hockey. But okay. So first of all, you can do that. Another thing you could do is you can incorporate the idea, and you can say, okay, well, if you love hockey, what is it that you love about hockey? And what skills does hockey give a person outside of skating, like in the real world? So now it's like moving away from just hockey's amazing and, you know, all of the things that they want to like generalize, because they like to be very general, I'm guessing. So he wants to tell about something. So he's kind of telling a story. So if you could get him to move from the story type of writing into a persuasive type of writing. So you say, okay, well, let's talk about hockey. People who play hockey, what kind of skills do they have? Not on the ice. What skills does hockey teach you that are going to help you in the real world? So it teaches you to work hard. It teaches you to get up when you fall down. If you're a goalie, wow, you are really, really learning how to push through failure. Like, because you're going to let some goals in. That's inevitable, right? So you can like look at those things, and you could have him prove that, and then do some research and discover, and why do those skills matter? So he can go that route. You could, like, unfortunately, at some point, I just give them a list and I say, pick one of these. Sorry. That's how it is. It is hard. It's hard to get the buy-in. But again, I would take the buy-in away from the topic and put the buy-in on the skills he's learning. So take it a step back and say, listen, I know that you don't want to write about anything but hockey, but please think of another topic that you could write about. And if he understands that he's going to learn valuable skills that are going to help him in his life, and I know at like 12 years old, it's hard for them to look that far, but it's super important for them to see that it really matters. So when my son was 12, the thing was, he was going to be a YouTuber. YouTuber. And so, well, we talked about that. Well, he talked about that a lot. And so we talked about, well, okay, well, if you're going to be a YouTuber, you have to be consistent. You have to be able to communicate. You have to be able to do all these things. So I'm guessing he plays hockey. Okay, so he needs to learn how to be consistent. He needs to learn how to push through and do hard things, even when he doesn't want to. And so those skills are going to transfer to hockey as well. And backwards. But, you know, he's not going to see it backwards yet. So that might be a good step. So the other thing is, and, you know, this is harder sometimes for homeschoolers, but they will take a topic given to them by someone else much better than they will from their parents, because they'll fight back. So we, anytime you like bring in someone else, so even like a parent or an aunt or uncle, and say, listen, can you just take over the writing bit for a little bit and see if they can get something, tell them what you want, so that they don't just let them write about hockey for another 2 years while let them figure it out, you know. So tell them what you're looking for. I need you to get them to write about a different topic or whatever, and so see if you can get like some outside input into that, and that would go a long way. Does that seem like that might help? Okay, excellent. Anyone else? Do you have anything? Yes. Then physically write. Okay, the question is, do I try to keep them to handwriting or is typing okay? Her student would much rather type than handwrite any day. I'm going to guess that that's about a motor skill issue. Okay, so most often that's a motor skill thing. And economizing, because if I can do something much faster and get the same result, I'm going to choose, because I'm a thinking, logical, rational person, I want to do it the fastest way possible and get the same result. And typing is way, way faster. And you can read it. So it's also easier to edit. So, you know, I personally don't have an issue with typing. That isn't to say that handwriting isn't an important piece. But if you separate handwriting from composition, sure, why not? You know, if you still want to keep him handwriting, he has to do some things in handwriting. He has to do math, is terrible on the computer, like typed out. But like math by hand has to be legible. Handwriting practice has to be legible. If you want to separate that out, I mean, that's okay. Especially if students are struggling with fine motor skills or struggling with handwriting skills, it is actually advantageous to separate the handwriting from the creation process, because then they're not struggling with the fine motor skills while their brain's trying to do something else. It's in another part of the office building, like completely, completely different skill. So it's just, that's kind of my take on it. I know that some people might disagree. That's okay. I have some parents in my courses have their students handwrite absolutely everything in my course, and then I require them to have it typed when they hand it in. So then they type it. So, you know, I think that's a lot of extra work, especially when you come to editing. Like, editing is a very long process by hand, but so much faster on the computer. So the other piece of that, like for students that like handwrite and then they type in at the end, is now with AI, it's really important when students go to post-secondary that they have a record of their work. So if they handwrite it, don't get rid of the work. So like as they get older into high school, keep a record of their work. Not you, obviously. In post-secondary, oh, please don't. They keep a record of their work, but they need to do that. They need to keep a record of their work because the post-secondary institutions are checking for AI, and they're checking for plagiarism. So I mean, they're not going to find plagiarism if they've done their own work by hand, but they may find AI generation in there, because they cannot actually know what's AI generated. They only know whether the writing style is AI-like or not. What percentage of AI algorithms are there in your writing? The more we read AI algorithms, you're reading AI every day, okay? Every day. Blogs, news media, everywhere. It's all AI. Tons of AI. So the more we read those things, the more we incorporate that in our voice and the way we write. So it's going to be more and more and more difficult for institutions to know when something is generated by AI. And if they don't have a record, they're just going to get zero, or they're going to get kicked out. So they need to have a record. So Google Docs is great because it keeps a history of all the revisions, or keep handwritten things, or rename documents, like copy it and do second draft, third draft, fourth draft, so that you have a record of what's happening there. That's kind of a little tidbit extra for you. Anyone else? Anything else I can help you with today? Yes. Okay, the question is, her son, you know, with texting or typing back and forth to friends, the grammar and spelling and everything is terrible. And he says, it doesn't really matter because everyone types like this all the time. This is just the way it is. Things are changing, Mom, don't you know? Okay, in the real world, like individually, yes, that's true. Things are changing, unfortunately. My children make fun of me because I put commas in my texts. Can't help it. So, but the things are changing, like on like a personal level, they are changing. They're changing to some extent in the workplace. So we're seeing more like very quick, like emails back and forth, one line. But I will say it's very important to learn how to write, okay, just generally like back and forth emails that are courteous. It's very, very easy to misinterpret one sentence because we don't have context. We can't see someone's face, so especially in texting or whatever. And he will eventually, if he hasn't already, realize that people get really angry when you say things sometimes, and they think you mean something that you don't mean. So it's important to be able to like elaborate and to be able to talk a little bit more, to have better grammar and stuff. In the real world, in the work culture, you know, you really actually do need good grammar. Like, you can't just go hand in your resume looking like however and think you're going to get that job. So it is really important. So again, I would bring it back to, well, what do you want from life? Like, if you want to, like, work at the 7-Eleven, you're right. You don't need any of this. Don't say this, but you could drop out now, right? If you want to work at 7-Eleven, then that's great. But if you want to like have a job that's going to like help you raise a family, and it's going to be able to like give you a house, and going to be able to like homeschool your children or do anything, you're going to need to be able to present yourself in a way that's going to make you valuable to them. And that comes through the way you look. So the same way we dress appropriately for different places, it's not about authenticity, right? You know, so my son will say, well, I don't have to dress that way. He's 20. I don't have to dress that way just because they expect it. But it's good in our writing to present ourselves in the way we want people to see us. So that's kind of the piece. Is it time? Okay. All right. Okay. Does anyone have any more questions? She says I can talk all night. Yes. Okay, doing typing on the computer and autocorrect, and is that advantageous, or are they going to lose their ability to spell? Okay. I forget how old your kids are. 10 and 12. Okay. Early ages, they got to learn how to spell. So I was talking to someone today, a computer that's not hooked up to the internet. Like, you can shut autocorrect off. You don't need it. Like, you can shut it off on Google. You can shut it off anywhere. So learn the spelling. My daughter is 16, still struggles with spelling. She will probably always struggle with spelling. Some people have difficulties. We're not all good at the same things. At her point, she said, "Mom, I struggle with spelling. What am I going to do?" And I said, "Well, it's up to you. You have a choice right now. You can apply yourself and you can improve your spelling. Or you can come up with strategies that are going to help you." She's like, "Mom, I'm 16. I've already worked at this." I'm like, "Well, this is your choice. Like, you could work harder. You can do this." But she's already got strategies for how she's managing. So she's chosen strategies. So, but will they lose spelling? I don't believe they're going to lose spelling by using spell checks. I tell my students all the time, it's a nice tool, but it's often wrong. Spell check, grammar check, doesn't know what you're thinking, and it, as long as it's a word, then it's good. It doesn't know that it's the wrong word. It doesn't know that you are using the wrong, like, homophones and homographs. Like, oh, it's terrible. Like, spell check is not good for homophones and homographs. Students have to learn those. They have to recognize that those words mean different things. And they have to have the correct one. So my answer to that is, every family has to make their own choice. I don't personally have a problem with it. But I'm very quick to point out, oh, look, this is still wrong. It doesn't say this is wrong, but this is still wrong. This is why you can't trust it. Don't trust it. All the little red underlines, that's just hints that this might be wrong, and often the little red underlines are wrong, which drives me crazy, because then I have little red underlines still on my document, and that bugs me. So, and I get it. They don't want the little red underlines either. It's like big red X's. So, they still have to know spelling to use those things, and they still have to know grammar. And, oh, the free Grammarly is notoriously bad. So, it's definitely not to be relied on. So that's kind of what I would say to that. So I do want to respect your time. So I want to thank you so much for coming today. I did put up there, if you go back to the Matches page, I have a 4-week writing course. So make sure you check out what's on that page and see if there's some freebies there that might interest you. And I want to thank you. If you have any questions, I just want to say that I am a mentor at heart. That's what I do. It's who I am. I'm not a marketer at heart. So not. I am a mentor at heart. So if you have questions, please do reach out, because I would love to talk to you and help you through your journey and see if I can give you some tips and tricks that might help you in your path with your students. So thank you very much for coming and listening today and for participating and sharing so openly about the struggles that you're having in your home. Thank you very much.